Am I up? Yeah, I'm thinking. Fish and Game Commission will start in about 1 or 2 minutes. Thank you.
Here's a rabbit's foot. Take it when you go. So you'll always know you're safe from home. Wear your ruby shoes when you're far away. So you'll always stay home in your heart. You'll always have a lucky star. It shines because of what you are. Even in the deepest dark, because you're
good morning, everyone. I'm Richard Rogers, president of the Fish and Game Commission. Welcome to the September meeting of the Fish and Game Commission. If you remember the last time that we were up here in this building, we were actually over where the, I don't know, whatever they're doing over there, Jazzercise is. So obviously Jazzercise is more important than the Fish and Game Commission to the folks up here. We're going to have to correct that problem. If you remember that meeting room, it was spectacular. You had a wonderful view of the lake, and apparently Jazzercise needs a view of the lake. So anyway, so here we are. Sitting immediately to my left is Commissioner Sutton of Monterey. Sitting over the top of this gentleman, whom I'll introduce in a minute, is Commissioner Cindy Gustafson of this place. And sitting to her right is Commissioner Jim Kellogg of Concord. Sitting immediately to my right is John Carlson, the Executive Director of the Commission. Deborah Barnes, our Attorney General, is sitting down there. John Fisher, there is John, Deputy Executive Director of the Commission, Adriana Shea, Deputy Executive Director of the Commission, Sherry Cole, of our administrative staff. She's an analyst, and Anita Biederman is right there, also administrative staff. In the audience, we have Lieutenant Christy Worster, and where is Christy? There she is, and Wrigley. Christy, could you bring Wrigley up just for a second? Let everybody see our what looks more like an ankle biter, but you say Wrigley's a mixed breed? Yeah, she's very pretty. Thanks, Christy. And Assistant Chief Rob Allen is sitting over there, standing over there against the wall. Assistant Chief Mike Herring just came in the back of the room, and Chief Nancy Foley is back in the very back part of the room. We have Donald Cook, who is Director of the Department. Sitting next to him is John McCammon, Chief Deputy Director, and Deputy Director Sankey Mastrup is sitting to John's right. Jordan Traverso is there. She is sitting in the back of the room. She must have picked that up when she was in school. Sandy Morey is here. There she is. Yeah. Let me see. That's Region 2, North Central Region 2. And that's it, I think. Did I forget anyone, John? Take it away.
Thank you, Richard. A few housekeeping things. I'd like to remind everyone that we're being videotaped today. It's live streaming across the internet. So keep in mind, anything you say is on film. You are We have a service that you can watch old meetings through our website. It patches into the video company's website, and the archives are free to view. And now they're indexed by agenda item. Anyhow, if you want to speak on any agenda item today, please turn in a green card to staff up here. And the time that you will be allotted will be set by the president, depending on where we are in the day and the amount of people wanting to speak on the issue. There is an aggregate time limit of 10 minutes per person, and we'll keep track of that. So if you want to speak on several things, use your time judiciously. We're about to start public forum, so if you want to get your card in right now for that. Before that, we're going to have a little welcome and informative update on what's going on in this region of the department by the regional manager, Sandy Morey.
Good morning again, Sandy.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Sandy Morey, and I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the North Central region of the Department of Fish and Game, also known as Region 2. I'll take just a few minutes to share with you our areas of focus, some of the things that the staff are working on. North Central region is made up of 17 counties, and it encompasses the northern Sierra Nevada, much of the Sacramento Valley, goes west to Clear Lake and east to Lake Tahoe. About 150 permanent staff work in the region in areas of habitat conservation, wildlife management, fisheries management, and admin. Currently, staff are engaged with local government and others in some landscape-based conservation planning areas in 9 of the 17 counties. And these plans guide where future development will occur and also where important habitat and wildlife resources will be protected. We're also increasingly involved in water issues, both in terms of quantity and quality of water for fish and wildlife. Region staff are currently engaged in 16 large hydroelectric projects. Also, they're currently managing 29 CalFed ecosystem restoration grant projects in the region, totaling about $73 million. We've recently been involved with partners on protecting wildlife habitat. I thought I'd mention one in the Truckee Basin, where we have been involved with partners in protecting 3,300 acres of what's now the Truckee River Wildlife Area. And it encompasses 7 miles of the Truckee River all the way to the Nevada state line and its associated uplands. The department owns about 160,000 acres of land, wildlife areas, and ecological reserves in the North Central region, and it includes some of California's premier waterfowl areas in the Sacramento Valley. Also, there are 4 hatcheries, mitigation hatcheries for Chinook salmon and steelhead on the McCollumy, the Feather, and the American Rivers, and also the American River Trout Hatchery. Our wildlife biologists regularly provide advice to people who come in contact with wildlife and try and keep those contacts from becoming conflicts. And tomorrow you'll hear from Jason Hawley, our wildlife biologist, about how we've teamed up with the Nevada Department of Wildlife to tackle bear-human interactions in the Tahoe Basin. Invasive species have become an increasingly important issue, and our staff are working on monitoring and education and outreach on species like quagga mussel and New Zealand mud snail and their real and potential effects to native species and natural systems. We're also conducting monitoring following the Lake Davis northern pike eradication effort last fall. And I want to thank the commission for its efforts and support in that project. Our fisheries biologists are actively involved in native species recovery, including interagency efforts to recover Lahontan cutthroat trout and Paiute cutthroat trout, both federally listed species. And in the region, we're continuing to emphasize conservation education and outreach. And in October, we'll hold our 12th annual American River Salmon Festival, and that festival draws about 20,000 people every year, and we educate people about not only salmon but the river ecosystem. So that'll give you just a snapshot of some of the things we're doing in the region. If you ever have any questions about things going on in the North Central region, please feel free to contact me. And I hope you have a great time while you're here in Tahoe.
Thank you, Sandy. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sandy. That brings us to public forum. Any member of the public may address and or ask questions of the commission relating to the implementation of its policies or any other matter within the jurisdiction of the commission. As a general rule, action cannot be taken on issues not listed on the agenda. Staff will normally be requested to follow up on such items at the discretion of the commission. Submittal of written comments is encouraged to ensure that all comments will be included in the record before the commission. Please be prepared to summarize your comments to the time allocated by the president, which is 3 minutes for this item. Right now we have 4 speaker cards for this. If anyone else wants to talk, now's the time to get your card in. Our first speaker is Jamie Farrow, followed by Jim Martin, followed by Milo Vukovic.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. My name is Jamie Farrow. I'm with Ocean Conservancy. I'm an aquaculture policy analyst, and I just wanted to come to this meeting today, introduce myself to you. I look forward to the work that we will definitely engage in the coming months and years, as aquaculture definitely is on its way to becoming a major issue that we deal with in our waters. And I also look forward to working on the implementation of SB 201, California Sustainable Oceans Act. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to put some faces with your names. I've met some of you, and I look forward to meeting the rest of you and working with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
Jamie,
question.
Just a comment. I'm sure George Leonard has mentioned this to you, but one of the issues we've been dealing with in California with respect to aquaculture is the competing interests in the state between promoting aquaculture on the one hand but protecting native species on the other hand. And so we look forward to your input in helping us deal with that inherent conflict. It is important to protect native wildlife from invasives. On the other hand, many aquaculture species are non-native, things like barramundi and tilapia. And we ought to be allowing aquaculture of those species where it's consistent with our mandate to protect native wildlife. So look forward to working with you.
Great. Does that mean that the seafood watch list is going to be resolved on that issue? Never mind. I'm just pulling his chain.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Martin, followed by Milo Vukovic, followed by Paul Weakland.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jim Martin. I'm with the Recreational Fishing Alliance. And we submitted a letter to you on behalf of a number of different fishing associations and individuals who have been involved in the MLPA process so far. And the focus of the letter is our abalone resource on the North Coast and the potential impact of the preferred alternative of the MLPA on our fishery. If I could take a minute to pass this out to the commissioners in case they haven't.
Is that the letter?
This is the letter.
Actually, I think they've got copies in there.
We have it.
Is this the same one you sent me last week?
Yes.
Emailed, yeah. You've got copies, commissioners, in your correspondence received after the meeting binder packet.
Jim, you got to keep in mind you're dealing with the award-winning commission staff.
I realize that. I just didn't want, I'm here to back him up in case he has a slip.
Go ahead and waste paper.
We appreciate your backup because we're not always on that one, so thanks.
Thank you. The IPA would represent a 30% effort shift in our fishery. Most of that would dump to the south into Fort Ross, which is already a heavily used site. It would also close about 30% of our public access sites on the North Coast. What we're asking for, pretty basic, 5 simple changes. Most importantly, we're asking you to remove MPAs that do not meet the science advisory team's guidelines or the DFG's feasibility guidelines that the regional stakeholder group was presented with at the beginning of the process. So if you have any questions, I don't want to take up a whole lot of time with this at this point. We look forward to providing you with more information at your October meeting. Did everybody get a chance to look at the letter?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Just coming into the room was Maria Vojkovic, Marine Region Manager, sitting in the back of the room.
She thought she could sneak in.
She can't.
Milo Vukovic, followed by Paul Weakland.
Milo Vukovic, President of Sonoma County Abalone Network. I just want to correct one thing Jim said. He said 30% effort shift. He meant to say there would be a 20% effort shift. And the proposal we gave you would minimize that effort shift and bring it down to 4.4% of an effort shift. And I just want to clarify that for you. Thanks.
Thanks, Milo.
Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. On that note, we do not believe that you're utilizing the abalone resource properly or efficiently here in the state of California. For years, we have not been able to harvest abalones like we would like and request that immediate opening for the harvest of abalones be done south of San Francisco in San Francisco County, San Mateo County, Santa Cruz County, Monterey County, and San Luis Obispo County. There are large numbers of abalones, and harvesting would not hurt the minimum viable population in any way, shape, or form. But people of the state of California are not being allowed to utilize this resource because of the scheme or scam for abalone aquaculture. On that, I have handouts. I want to talk about the Disease Control Committee that we've been waiting for over 10 years for their summary of the withering syndrome on abalone. But you don't want to talk about it because it's an eyesore, and we see how you purge the files and eliminate any eyesores or failures from the record. On that note, we would like to say that this item 20 that you have here, disease control, this is totally inadequate. The failure of the Fish and Game to do anything up to this point just shows what they're trying to do. It's an eyesore. Don't talk about it. Shove it under the thing, the carpet. And the first thing I'd like to point out is economic impact is unknown. Well, that's not true. Let's talk about the economic impact of the withering syndrome of the that you outplanted from 1974 to 1984 in your abalone enhancement program from the Fish and Game. Only after you saw the abalones falling off the rocks did you stop that program. We would like to make comment that the South African cibellid worm has always been known as the South African worm for over 15 years, but now you want to change it into a scientific name. That is not consistent with the public's views to make these wordings easy to understand for someone of average intelligence. Here you are again complicating things by scientific names, trying to hide the truth and the reality by sweeping under the carpet the South African worm that you introduced into California with your scheme of abalone aquaculture. The other thing is the abalone herpes. We know the abalone herpes is abalone herpes, but you want to change it into another name, and you don't want to acknowledge the large die-offs that have occurred from the abalone's herpes. You want to change it again to another name to camouflage the realities and the status. We want to remind you that there is a mechanism in nature that when there's too much genetic diversity, too many hybrids, too many outplants, that nature has a way of cleansing and purifying itself by these large die-offs. This is what nature does. When you have fouled the gene pool and the genetic reservoir so badly that no spawning is allowed, you have negated all spawning. You have denuded areas.
Mr. Weakley, you need to summarize. Thank you.
That concludes public forum speaker cards. We move on to item 2, receipt of public testimony on proposed changes to Section 632, Title 14, related to Morro Bay State Marine Recreational Management Area, Elkhorn Slough State Marine Reserve, and Dana Point State Marine Park. Note the adoption hearing is scheduled for November 14th, 2008 in Huntington Beach. At this time, my understanding is the department does not have a presentation since this is receipt of public testimony. Okay. We have 4 speakers for this issue, or just 3, I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
Rick Elgert, Walt Manzel, Samantha Murray. 3 minutes each, please.
Good morning, all. I am Rick Algert, the Harbor Director for the City of Morro Bay. I urge you to
support the recommended changes to the Morro Bay State Marine Recreational Management Area. These regulations, as adopted, prohibit taking of many of the recreational or prohibit many of the recreational activities that were not intended to be prohibited when this when the MLPAI process went through the regional stakeholders group all the way up to the Fish and Game Commission. The problem specific to this, to our harbor, is that as written, the regulations can be read to prohibit almost all harbor operations and maintenance in one way or another. So to summarize on that, I would just urge you to support this and go ahead and adopt the regulations in November. I would like to add one little item, that it is my understanding that the we are able to proceed with the fix, which is of most importance to our harbor, and I appreciate that. But we still are not able to proceed, I don't think, with the recreational uses that were prohibited. This does not allow recreational crab fishing as it should. So I know, I understand, I think, why there is a feeling, by some at least, that that is a substantive change and needs to be dealt with through the management process or the master plan review process. I would ask you to keep this issue in mind. I think that we can find and show you all that the recreational crab and many of the other recreational uses that are now prohibited in the bay were not intended to be prohibited. They are not deleterious to the environment. And in fact, the name of the MPA is the Morro Bay State Marine Recreational Management Area. So please keep that one in mind as you go through the longer term process.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Walt Manziel, followed by Samantha Murray.
Morning, Walt.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the commission, department staff, guests. Walt Manziel, representing the California Rifle and Pistol Association. We just want to be sure when we go through this process, as I know is dear to some of the people on the commission, that we preserve the waterfowl hunting areas in Morro Bay as they are at the present time, and that this Marine Act does not impact on that. Thank you.
I thought you were going to tell us you wanted to shoot crabs. Thank you.
Samantha Murray.
Good morning, Commissioners. Samantha Murray, Ocean Conservancy. As you know, the Ocean Conservancy has been very, very involved in the MLPA process over the last several years. We served both on the Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group and the North Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group, and we've attended virtually every public meeting related to the MLPA initiative. As a result, we just want to make some brief comments on the changes proposed at Morro Bay, Elkhorn Slough, and Dana Point. At Morro Bay, State Marine Recreational Management Area, Ocean Conservancy supports the proposed change to explicitly allow standard harbor maintenance activities. At the Dana Point State Marine Park, we also support the change to rename the Dana Point State Marine Conservation Area. However, at the Elkhorn Slough State Marine Reserve, we oppose the proposed changes. Elkhorn Slough is home to several threatened and endangered species, and also in provides important fish nursery grounds and roosting, forage, and haul-out areas for birds and marine mammals, including many species of concern. In recognition of this, all of the regional stakeholder group proposals that were on the table in the Central Coast included full protection of the Slough Channel. The Commission's adopted objective for the Elkhorn Slough State Marine Reserve was, and I quote, "to continue to provide complete protection for one of the few estuarine areas of the Central Coast and to expand this protection to include the entire Slough Channel." So the current proposal to reopen the back end of the State Marine Reserve is a fundamentally inconsistent with the goal to the goal of complete protection for the entire Slough Channel. We recognize that Kirby Park has historically been used as an access point for recreational angling, and this issue was fully discussed in the meetings of the regional stakeholder group. And ultimately, the RSG concluded that the high ecological value of the slough, as well as the availability of numerous other places for angling nearby, justified full SMR protection of the entire channel. So for these reasons, we urge the Commission to respect this view and to maintain the integrity of the Elkhorn Slough State Marine Reserve and to deny the proposed boundary change at the Elkhorn Slough State Marine Reserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
That concludes public comment on this issue.
Okay, we have no the department is not going to be making a presentation. However, I'm sure there are some comments or questions from the commission, and I know Commissioner Sutton has one.
I was a little surprised at the Ocean Conservancy, Samantha, letter on this issue. We had been considering, and the department certainly had portrayed the situation at Elkhorn Slough as a matter of correcting an error in boundary, a minor error in the boundaries of this MPA. As I look at the diagram of the proposed changes, I wonder about that, and my concern was further raised by your letter. However, it's my understanding that the Kirby Point area is mainly a boat landing. This is a boat landing issue, not a take issue. That is to say, the fishermen who land their catches there typically don't take those catches in the slough. It's just a boat landing area, and that so reopening this boat landing area would simply allow for fish landed elsewhere to be landed there, as they have always been. This issue was originally brought to our attention, as I understand it, by department game wardens who said, wait a minute, this can't have been right. This is an error. We're just correcting that. So we've been treating it like that. If, on the other hand, it's a more substantive change, then we need to reconsider what we should do on this. So I'm a little confused about where this stands.
Commissioner Kellogg, you had a question?
Yeah, before Sankey responds to that, I just want to reiterate that when we first did this, we made it very clear to people that we would be able to come back and amend these things if we found a blatant error in the process that we went through in the beginning. This is just one of those incidences, and now we have the same people who were fighting each other, fighting over the amendment, but it's common sense stuff, and if it does not, like the Speaker Mandel said, affect the existing Morro Bay black brant hunting, and that I'm perfectly fine with. I just want to find out from Sankey that that's not affected, and that this is just an access for fishermen to get in and out. It basically is.
Sankey, you have a comment?
Yeah. To make it clear, as clear as this, the comment you heard from the RSG is that the stakeholders did, in fact, want to fully protect that slough. But during the commission's deliberations at the time, this one and Greyhound Rock, you remember, were access point issues. And the commission consciously made a decision, in spite of the recommendations from the stakeholder groups, to continue to allow access at this place and at Greyhound Rock, if you remember. When we put the long lat lines in there, we thought that it kept that area open. It turns out later from enforcement, when they're out there with GPSs, they realize the line was 550 feet too far to the north, so it inadvertently closed that access point. So all this move is here really to do is to correct that boundary error, not to necessarily allow additional take. There is some minor take. Most of the fish folks here launch at this point, and as Commissioner Sutton pointed out, work their way into the ocean eventually for salmon fishing. There is some fishing in the slough. I should also point out that the Elkhorn Slough SMR does not protect the whole slough, even as it currently exists. There's whole sections that aren't in it. One side of it's not in it. Our proposal here is simply really to allow that as a fishing access point, as the commission had originally decided. It was only, like I said, an inadvertent discovery that the line we had chosen was too hot, too far to the north. And so that's kind of the situation.
You,
it's your prerogative, obviously.
Well, this has received a public testimony today. There'll be ample opportunity to have more public testimony on this in October. We take action in November on this issue. So thank you very much. Any further questions or comments from the commissioner? Fire away.
That moves us to item number 3, discussion and possible adoption of proposed amendments to subsection 29.85A 2A, Title 14, related to crabs, open season. My understanding is Maria Vojkovic is going to give an explanation on this.
Good morning, commissioners.
Morning,
sorry,
Maria.
I was late today. You surprised
me. I didn't notice.
Surprised me by starting a little bit earlier than I'm used to for these meetings. Today's the adoption hearing for recreational Dungeness crab season change, and I have two very quick slides. Please. Oh, just, sorry. Well, I missed my pretty slide. I'm trying to do Dan Perigary's kind of slides, and there's the first. Okay. If you remember, the department came to you a few months ago because of several faxes and letters that both the commission and the department had received relative to the North Coast recreational Dungeness crab sport fishery opening date. Currently, the regulations are the last Saturday in November that fishery opens for the sport fishery, and because of calendar changes during the years, in some years they only have a 1 day prior to the commercial fishery starting, and they're looking for more opportunity prior to all of the commercial gear being in the water. So that was the impetus for the change, and the department proposed two possible options, one that would change the opening date to the first Saturday in November and one that would change it to the third Saturday in November. We haven't had, as far as my recollection, any public comment at the previous commission meetings. We did get at least one comment, written comment, from the recreational fishery. And the department considered that recommendation and discussed what might be the best option here for management with the enforcement part of the department, and we have recommended that you choose option one, which is to have the opening dates throughout the state being consistent the first Saturday of November. And we feel that this would be easier for the public to understand. It would also assist in enforcement, and we do not believe, because of the size of the recreational fishery, that it would have a biological effect. So I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Maria. Any questions? We do have one public speaker. Thank you, Maria.
Jim Martin.
Sorry about that. Jim Martin, Recreational Fishing Alliance. I live in the region up there north of Point Arena where this would take effect. And it's always been a kind of sore spot with us that we usually get about 3 days before the commercial opener up there, and the weather's so rough, a lot of times we don't get to fish at all before the commercial moves up from San Francisco to our area. And within about 10 days, they take a lot of the commercial-grade crabs out of our area. So I think the other point to keep in mind is the charter industry is hurting in Fort Bragg and these small towns up there. This would give them a little something extra to do while we have the salmon and rockfish closures. So we support the department's recommendations on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. John?
Staff has a suggested motion if you're ready for that.
Please. Oh, any questions or comments about the no. Go ahead.
So, Jim, that this last public comment ended the public comment on this issue. Suggested motion, Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to the authority vested by Sections 200, 202, 205, 215, and 220 of the Fish and Game Code, and to implement, interpret, or make specific Sections 200, 202, 205, 206, 215, and 220 of said code, hereby amends subsection 29.85, A2A, Title 14, California Code of Regulations relating to the crabs open season by selecting the department's recommended option, which is option one. Please note the regulatory language will be included in the commission's website.
Do I hear that motion?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion or questions? All those in favor? Aye. Unanimous.
Aye.
Thank you. Item four.
Item four is consideration of certification of final environmental document, possible adoption of findings and proposed project or alternative, and final adoption of sections 163 and 164, Title 14, related to commercial herring fishery and harvesting of herring eggs on kelp. My understanding is Sankey, I guess Maria, would have some comments.
Hello again, Maria.
Good morning again. I am not going to be dealing with the certification of the environmental document. That's I don't know how you're planning to do that, whether you're doing it in two motions today or all in one. I will be refreshing your memory about the proposed regulatory changes.
We're actually dealing with that
all
in three
in
separate. No, they're three separate motions. So you can go ahead and
okay
discuss your part of it, assuming Steve can get there. Steve is there.
Ready?
Yep.
Great. Thank you. So this is an annual regulatory change that the department brings to you to set the quotas and the opening dates for the various commercial fisheries on Pacific herring. Just a little bit of process background. The department has been managing this fishery in this manner since the early 70s, and we do so with quite a bit of biological data, environmental data, and public input. We determine the spawning biomass size and then recommend to you what portion of that spawning biomass we feel is can support a fishery and support a sustainable resource. So in this past year, we estimate that the spawning biomass is pretty similar to what it was in the previous year, and so our recommendation is consistent with what we've provided last year. We're recommending about 10% of the spawning biomass be set aside as the quota, so that would be 11,183 tons. How you might proportion that is to establish the San Francisco Bay quota. And once we have you establish that, then the other quotas for some of the minor fisheries in San Francisco Bay follow from that. So that would be a 1.9 quota for the CH permittee and a 1.1 for the herring eggs on kelp. We're recommending that you set the season dates to December 1st to 19th for the DH platoon and January 4th to March 20th for the odd-even platoons. To set the opening dates or the fishery dates for the Tomales Bay fishery from December 26th to February 27th, and to correct a technical error in the application that is in Title 14. It's the department's recommendation, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Commissioner Sutton?
Maria, as we've talked about before, I just want to reiterate my concern about the trend in this fishery. I realize this is a small pelagic fishery. It's highly variable by nature. However, when we see significant declines in biomass, the inability of the fishermen to catch even the quota that we give them, and so forth, they tend to be bad signs in a fishery. And so I appreciate the department's flexibility in allowing us the option of actually closing this fishery this year. Not that we will necessarily do that, but I appreciate having that option.
Any other further questions or comments?
Just
to Mr. Kellen?
I just want to reiterate what I have every time, and that is that we've, prior to the rest of the commissioners being here, we've been there and done that, Mike, and found out that sometimes the way the biomass is collected was faulty, and when at one time we had an argument about shutting it down, and the next year we had a bigger biomass than we've ever had before. So just want to caution everybody on what we're dealing with here and the experiences we've had in the past.
Thank you, Commissioner Kellogg. We do have one public speaker.
Sam Liberati. Sam?
Good morning, Sam. Nice to see you.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Sam Liberati. I'm chairman of the Herring Fisheries Advisory Committee. I'd like to give you guys a little bit of history here. The only face that's been up there since I've been coming here is Jim Kellogg, and a lot of things have happened. And I'd like to go back to when the department recommended closing the fishery. Mike Chrisman was chairman, and we had a speaker, a fisherman, get up and use the same information that was gathered by the department and make the case the complete opposite of what our biologists were saying. And Mr. Chrisman asked the department, are these all your numbers? And the department said, yes, they are. Then Mr. Chrisman said, then your numbers show that the fishery is not declining the way you say. And he decided that he sided with the fishermen, and so did Mr. Kellogg. And he told the department, you better start working with these people and get together instead of starting wars like what's happening right now. And it started to get a little better, but it's taken a long time. It's finally at that point. But when you talk about these numbers, you know, you've got to look at the way they took the surveys and the way they look, they take them now. And it changes the picture completely. For example, I got really upset one time at one of the meetings when the stuff was presented to the department by the head of the herring, the head biologist. The numbers that they got from their surveys were 65,000 ton. And he eliminated that from the program he was showing. And Jim probably remembers, I got so upset, I sat down. I said, somebody's got to answer this. And Ernie, who was our chairman then, Ernie Cope, got up and explained and everything. But my Italian temper just ran away with me. I couldn't do it. And when the meeting was over, we voted on 2-inch mesh and voted unanimously everybody to go along with that. And I went up and I thanked Mr. Hattoy and Sam Schmuckett. I don't know if I pronounced
Schuckett.
Schuckett, whatever.
Schuckett.
And I thanked both of them for voting for the 2-inch mesh. And they... Does that mean I'm talking too much?
It does, actually. You just need to summarize,
Sam.
Can I go
on, please?
Please, go ahead.
Okay, and...
But do summarize.
And they said, we voted for you because you were right. And then Mr. Hattoy approached the head of the herring and just got very upset. He says, I am trying to make a good decision up here as a commissioner. And when you don't feed me the right information, it makes me look like a fool, and I don't appreciate that. That was Mr. Hattoy. But anyway, you know, on the herring biomass, Alaska, Canada, we have a fish buyer from Canada here who's buying fish in San Francisco. But the biologists claim that 20% of a school of herring will not cause any damage to the herring schools. They go by 20% in Alaska and Canada. And we have a fisherman's committee that I'm on now that contributes a lot to what goes into these regulations. It used to, put it that way. And we decided that we would go with 15% and give ourselves a little bit of slack there. From 15%, we went to 10%. We went as low as 7%. And last year... we went along with the lower quota because we're only 17 boats or so fishing. And that average out to like 50 ton a boat. There's no way that we can catch 50 ton with such few boats. So that's one reason why it changes why you see we're not catching the quota. And the boats are not fishing because most of them are going in the hole. I mean, you go out there, you're paying $5 for fuel. You know, guys don't want to fish, okay? And I think it's important to know that the fishermen, you know, recommended closing that bonsai area. And I was the only one that voted no. But the fishermen voted unanimous to close that area because we knew the fish were spawning out there because of the road that comes up on our nets. And we decided that if we left that area alone and let the fish build up, and then we could hit them when they come to the beach where they were worth more money because there was also immatures being caught out there. Then we had the round haulers. And Frank Henry, who was the head of the herring fishery at that time, came to me and said, "Sam, we've got to get rid of the round haulers. They're catching a lot of small fish. They're catching immatures. They were catching fish like this. And they were also catching over their quotas. And they wanted to stop the individual quotas for the round haulers. And Frank told me, we can't do it unless you guys support us. And we did. Okay, so that's got, the round haulers are gone now. And they got their quota all the time because whatever they set on, they can catch. But I think it's important for you to know that all these areas that are closed now also affects, you know, how much fish we're catching. Hunter's Point is closed. All of the Oakland Airport is closed. The Bonsai area is closed. The Alameda Naval Air Station is closed. These were all areas that were open, so we're really limited to where we could fish. But the most important thing was how they take the biomass numbers. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy.
Any questions, Sam? Comments? No. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
Any other speaking cards?
No, that concludes public comment on this item.
Go ahead, John.
Before I get into the, well, we have three motions. I'm going to combine the second two into one. Let's go through the first one first, which is certification of the document. Suggested motion, Fish and Game Commission hereby certifies that the final environmental document on Pacific herring has been completed in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act. It was presented to the commission, and the commission has reviewed and considered the information contained in the final environmental document prior to approving the project. The certified environmental document provides that there are no significant adverse environmental impacts resulting from the proposed project. The commission finds, on the basis of the facts in the record and the environmental document, that the proposed project and alternatives will have no significant adverse impact.
Do I hear that notice, or excuse me, motion for certification?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Aye.
And now I'm going to combine, on your page 7 in your analysis, I'm going to combine the second and third motions, but I want to confirm with the department that their recommended 10% is still what stands. I might have missed you saying that, Maria. Thank you.
It does, for the record.
Okay. Suggested motion. Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to Section 21080.5 of the Public Resources Code, hereby adopts the proposed project for the or alternative for the proposed regulatory action relating to Sections 163 and 164, Title 14, herring. The Fish and Game Commission, also pursuant to authority vested by Sections 1050, 5510, 8539, 8550, 8553, and 8555 of the Fish and Game Code, and to implement, interpret, or make specific Sections 150, 7850, 7850.5, 7852.2, 8043, 8053, 8389, 8550 through 8556, 857, And
no, it's 8557. It's 8557.
8557 and 8559 of the said code. Hereby amend section 163 and 164, title 14, related to herring, selecting a quota of 10% of the estimated spawning biomass. Further, the commission directs the staff to prepare a notice of determination consistent with the approval and adoption of associated regulations. This notice of determination is to be filed with the Secretary of Resources for pursuant to section 781.5, title 14, and section 21080.5 of the Public Resources Code. Please note the regulatory language will be included in the commission's website.
Do I hear that motion?
I want to make that motion with the caveat that so everybody understands, this is the result of the directors, herring advisory committee, and the fishermen working together with the department and coming to the right conclusion. So I want to thank the department for that and make the motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Oh, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Unanimous. Item 5.
Item 5, update on the fire status in the Marble Mountains and possible consideration of emergency action to close the Marble Mountains Roosevelt Elk Hunt for 2008 because of wildfires. Sankey Mastrip, Deputy Director.
Good morning, Commissioners. As you may have been following the fires in California, it's an annual issue. This one in particular was giving some concern with some of the tag holders. As you know, being drawn for an elk hunt in this state is quite a privilege, something I have yet to be done, happened to me myself. And some of the hunters were concerned that with the fires and the restrictions and access that they wouldn't be able to fully take advantage of their tags for the elk hunt in the Marble Mountains area. And so we put this on the agenda just in case we had to take action. But I'm happy to report that based on the current status of the fire and the control efforts, working with Region 1 staff, less than 10% of the hunt areas affected, and the department's decided that there's more than enough elk and area to hunt for the few, it's like 45 tag holders, that we feel that there's no point at this stage of changing the hunt and letting the hunt continue as is.
You mean elk don't stand in place and burn up? I'll be darned. What a shock. I think we do have one public speaker on that, on this.
Walt Manziel.
Pass. Okay, go ahead. So
there will be no vote, no
suggestion. No vote, no motion, or are there any comments or questions from the commissioners? Nope. Moving on. Item 6.
I also would like to commend the department. My understanding is they personally contacted every one of the hunters, about 40, 45 of them. So item number 5, I'm sorry, item 6, discussion and possible action regarding potential funding, a proposal submitted to the Ocean Protection Council. And this is an item that I believe Commissioner Sutton wants to discuss.
Commissioner Sutton?
This is really just for information only, but as you all know, the Ocean Protection Council is administers the California Ocean Protection Trust Fund, which, among other things, receives revenue from Proposition 84 and other sources. One of their priorities is marine fisheries in California, which, of course, are regulated by the commission. So I have been trying to work more closely with the OPC and their staff to make sure that what they're doing is in line with what we're doing. Since in many cases the OPC and the commission are mirror images of one another, we have authority but no money, they have money but no authority. So hence the desire for our bodies to work more closely together. In this
sounds
case,
like a marriage.
Yeah. In this case, the OPC staff have identified 6 or 7 potential fisheries-related actions that they intend to pursue over the next few years, consistent with their strategic plan. Of those, they have teed up 2 proposals or staff recommendations for consideration at their meeting next week. The meeting next week is in Half Moon Bay on Wednesday and Thursday. And I just wanted to just brief the commission on those 2 actions that are coming up next week to see whether we might want to throw our collective support behind what the OPC is trying to do. The first one actually is something that, that we intend to pursue as a joint project, and that is the OPC staff is requesting authorization to disperse up to $250,000 to conduct a lessons learned evaluation of the Marine Life Management Act and its performance to date, and provide recommendations to improve future MLMA actions. Now, as you know, the MLMA is California's principal fishery statute. We administer that statute here at the Commission with the active support of the Department. And we felt, along with the OPC, that the lessons learned exercise for the MLPA was so useful, not just in terms of retrospective analysis, but prospective as well, that we ought to conduct a similar analysis on the MLMA. So the OPC staff has teed that up as a joint project of the Ocean Protection Council and the Fish and Game Commission, with the active participation of the department. The second proposal or staff recommendation that they've teed up is concerns collaborative fisheries research, something else that we have gone on record in support of. And they are proposing to disperse up to $300,000 to the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission, which, of course, is the commission that that unites the three West Coast states, to create a collaborative fisheries research organization in California to get fishermen more involved in fisheries research. So I'd like to propose, I guess it's not a motion so much as just a proposal, that we as a commission throw our support behind these two staff recommendations of the OPC. I'm planning to be in Half Moon Bay next Wednesday to testify personally in support of these proposals. I think Sankey is planning to be there as well on behalf of the department. But I would like to carry the mandate of the full commission with me if I can, rather than just speaking personally in support of these.
Any questions or comments to the request? I believe, Adriana, you're going to be there too, right? Yep.
I just wanted to ask the department or our staff if they had any recommendations on this or perspective on these requests.
Adriana, do you have any comments?
As far as our current proposal for funding for the MLMA, we've been working very closely. Both Commissioner Sutton and I have been working very closely with OPC staff, Dr. Christine Blackburn, and as well as with Sankey Mastrup, in making sure that this thing is wired out. So I feel very comfortable with it. Fairly excited.
Sankey, do you have a comment?
It's not my money, so. all the more power to you.
Very little of what we discuss here is your money, if I remember correctly, Sankey.
It makes it easier for me to agree. The lessons learned thing has been extremely valuable on the MLPA process. On the MLMA, as you know, the last several experiences were challenging. And we do believe there's some value in looking at those efforts and see if there's some way to streamline it, be more efficient, because it cost a lot of money and it took a lot of time on something that most of us believe shouldn't have. And so if we can go back and learn some ideas of how to avoid some of the snarls, if you will, that we ran into, that would be fantastic and useful to us all, because the MLMA is still largely an unfulfilled mandate. And we do believe it has tremendous value for fisheries, and anything that can do to help that, we support certainly. And we wish the group luck at doing that retrospective and prospective.
Sankey, I think that's well said. You had a further comment?
No, I wanted to make sure the department and our staff were comfortable with what Commissioner Sutton was proposing, and because we just got the letter this morning in our correspondence packet, so I wanted to make sure I understood.
I'd like to weigh in just a little bit on that myself. I have been following it regularly, relatively closely, and I think the parallel between the lessons learned on the MLPA and the what we're now going back to try to do on the MLMA is actually fairly accurate. I'm not sure if I've ever seen a better lessons learned procedure than what we did for the MLPA, and if we can replicate that on the other, it's not just the MLMA. There are other things out there that we could actually go back and say, gee, why do we really do that, or could have done this, or could, you know, these are wonderful processes if they come out even remotely as well as the MLPA process. And I personally am 100% behind it.
No, I completely agree. It's been the missing part of the cycle, if you will, in these management processes. The only slight disadvantage we have on the MLMA, there's been some time since that process. So we will have lost some information, but I do think there's still significant amounts to be gleaned there.
Yeah, so, there's institutional memory loss, unfortunately, because it has been, you're right, quite right, quite a bit of time.
Right. The only other comment.
But I mean, this is a good way to pick it up. But what that suggests is the time is ripe. You cannot, time is of the essence here. We cannot allow this to get any further dispersed.
Yeah, and I'm kind of hoping that one of the outcomes is that they suggest the next time we do an FMP, you immediately initiate some kind of a lessons learned process, as they've been doing on
the MLMA. That's a lesson we've learned.
Yeah. The other thing I do want to say is the department really does appreciate all this energy and help both from the OPC and other entities. But simply as a word of caution, is one of the things we're starting to run into a little trouble is physically having the staff and the capacity to engage all this energy.
So
that's something we'll be struggling to try and figure out how to help make sure we're available and our data is available for all these projects. And that's something I'm assuming will come out in some of these evaluations. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, are there any further comments or questions? Is it then the pleasure of the commission to send our wholehearted support for this effort? In what form would we want to do this?
I would just as soon make a motion saying that versus
giving
directions.
Do I hear a motion?
Yeah, a motion to support those funding requests.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any further comment and questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Unanimous. Thank you very much. Well done. Seven.
I actually have a. We don't have any speaker
thank
cards.
I actually have a what?
That was on item number six.
Yes.
Actually, I'm sorry. We do have Paul Weakland.
Oh, I'm Paul, my apologies.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Before he starts speaking, I want to remind you that a couple of years ago we had a ruling out of the Attorney General's office that we do not have to listen to repetitious rhetoric from the same speaker all the time. So if you would make it clear that he has to give us something new if he's going to talk on each issue.
Okay.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland, wouldn't it be refreshing for you to answer the questions instead of having to ask the same questions repeatedly over and over year after year? Questions about the withering syndrome. Questions about funding, questions about aquaculture. We see that there's a failure and a complete disregard for the public. We know that you're required public meeting.
Mr. Weakland, stop talking. Mr. Weakland, stop talking. This relates to collaborative fisheries and the MLMA. Please make your remarks specific to those.
This is not Zonkey's money. Whose money is it? Does the money come out of the general fund? Who's accountable for this? Who's accountable for the wrong assumptions, the flawed concepts, the redundancy, the repetitive and duplicate studies? It seems that whenever a study doesn't work out just the way you want, let's study it again and we'll manipulate and maneuver to come out the way our bias wants it to. It doesn't seem that honesty is truly the motivating factor for the research that we're talking about here. Research is supposed to be the search for truth, but in this case, it's the search for more grant money. Now, this private-public partnership is a sellout. You're selling government services to the highest bidder. It's not right. This is almost tyranny, one step down. This collaborative research is something that the fishermen have wanted for many years, stymied and stalemated by the Fish and Game. This admits that your researchers in the Fish and Game have failed, or you wouldn't be needing to do this. That is all.
Wow. Anyway, I'm sorry to the listening public for that rant. Anyway, proceed. Item 7.
Actually, before we get to item 7, I have some more housekeeping news, not of a great nature. It's been brought to my attention just now that every one of us in the parking lot has a parking ticket on our vehicle. Thank God I didn't drive. I caught a ride. My understanding is that when you go out the kiosk, if you give them the parking ticket and you pay the $8 fee, they'll tear up the ticket but give you an $8 fee.
It's $8
apparently, there's signs posted. I missed those signs, but, you know, I was busy concentrating on this meeting. So, you know, I can. Anyhow, I just want to let everybody know. And I guess the kiosk, is there a gate to get out of the parking lot?
Right
Nancy? I haven't seen that.
Well, there was no one in the kiosk when we came in, but anyway.
Yeah, there is now, and now we're all got good tickets. So, okay. Item 7, Department of Fish and Game Legislative Report Update and Possible Consideration of Commission Positions on Proposed Legislation.
Mr. President, members of the Commission, thank you very much. A little late for the Commission to take...
Identify yourself, please. Oh, this I forgot to mention.
John McCammon.
Yes, who are you over there?
Chief Deputy Director of the Department. Legislative action on routine business, legislative business as opposed to the budget, concluded this last Sunday, and there are 873 bills which are pending movement to the governor's office. They have not moved to the governor's office, and the brinksmanship between the two department offices relative to the budget is so those bills or legislative proposals are pending action, movement to the governor's office in cooperation with the budget action. There is a statutory requirement for the governor to take action on those by September 30, or they become law as a matter of law. There are several of interest, I think, to the commission that we've previously discussed, and I'd like to point out a couple of those. AB 1806 by Wolk has to do with Prospect Island fishery last year and the intention for the department to develop fishery rescue plans. That has passed the legislature, and the department is working to develop, and you'll hear later about Capel's Lake as an example, fishery rescue activities as a routine activity of the department. The AB 2162 Bay Delta Sport Fishing Enhancement Stamp was renewed, which is a important part of the funding for departmental activities. AB 2938, Delta diversions requiring fish screens for Delta diversions. While that bill was not legislated, the subject of that bill is under consideration in the context of the Bay Delta conservation planning effort. So that issue is not dead. The legislation is. SB 1166 on game refuges will go to the governor. It's about firearms and game refuges, but it does allow the department some time to develop management plan amendments in order to implement that bill. I think the one that was important to the department is SB 1538, Steinberg's Recovery Strategies, which provides for mechanisms for endowment funds for providing an opportunity for existing endowment funds to be invested in a more aggressive manner in order to provide sufficient funds to carry out the endowment activities. And SB 1690, the Dungeness Crab Bill, did pass, and it does provide for the OPC to fund a Dungeness task force to report to the commission, actually, in 2010. So this commission will be actively involved in that activity. I think that's the primary ones I wanted to point out.
Thank you, John. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Sutton?
I just wanted to mention I sent Director Cook a note regarding AB 2532 the other day. This is the MLMA amendments that Assemblymember Laird has sponsored. Apparently, that bill has reached the governor's desk for signature or veto.
It's in the pending pile, yeah.
As I understand it. I realize the department has an opposed position, but what I don't understand is what that means when the bill is actually passed out of the legislature, reaches the governor's desk. Does that mean that the department is recommending the governor veto that bill, or is that a separate recommendation?
The mechanical way that occurs is a separate recommendation at the time the bill is before him. And that in that specific instance, there were ongoing discussions following commission action last month, I guess, with both the author and the proponents.
I know we've talked about this before, but it's my sense that this is the type of legislation that may that could well result from the kind of lessons learned evaluation that we're about to conduct, which presumably will tee up a number of actions, including legislative and policy and so forth actions.
However, it seems clear that we know enough already to know that AB 2532 is a good idea. And while I can understand the department's position that it might create a mandate, my sense is that it offers some important tools, new tools that to make the MLA more flexible and more effective. So I hope that we can encourage the governor to sign that legislation when it gets to it.
Do you have any further thoughts on that? I share Commissioner Sutton's feelings about that.
I mean, our primary concern with that legislation, as with a number of other bills that had good substantive recommendations or suggestions or direction to the department, is about the mandate without funding. And the department's general response to legislation, which provides a mandate for additional workload without identified funding, is we just simply can't do it. That's been our position on that legislation.
Well, I have immense, as I'm sure does Commissioner Sutton, without putting words in your mouth, immense empathy for that. And frankly, someone has to make those statements, and I'm glad you did. Having said that, however, just speaking to the specificity of this particular technical part of this issue, both of us feel sad that, you know, we can't somehow get the legislature to put their money where their mouth is.
And I thank you, Commissioner Sutton, for your notes to me. And I've obviously talked to a lot of people that have very strong opinions on both sides of the issue. And as John mentioned, ultimately the decisions certainly occurs at significantly higher pay grades than mine, although the governor does take a salary. But we're in a deliberative process, and so your comments are we are not taking them lightly. And nor others who have expressed similar concerns, nor others who have expressed concerns with the passage of the bill. So appreciate it much.
Director Cook, I must tell you that I know how hard it is to be against something that you know is a good idea, but I really applaud your doing that in this case.
Right.
We have far too many unfunded mandates keep rolling down from the legislature. And just literally not dealing with the problem at their level and asking all the rest of the state agencies, because it isn't just us, to deal with the problem. I mean, it's incredibly irresponsible and unprofessional at their level to do that.
Appreciate that recognition. And also I'd like to, and obviously you see it with our ability to fully staff some of these issues, do the monitoring, and as we've talked about repeatedly, our law enforcement folks in continuing mandates here. I also want to echo appreciation for Commissioner Sutton's earlier comments and your comments following those regarding the lessons learned. And I think the one in front of OPC right now is important, but I also want to emphasize that from my perspective, those lessons learned things should occur in all of our major programs that we're doing. And I think tomorrow we're going to talk about Lake Davis. And I think that's a prime example of sitting down and saying, what did we learn from this process and how do we improve it? So I appreciate that kind of support, and I think it's a good thing to go back and evaluate all those programs.
I think you probably need to start a cloning machine so you can clone Ed Pert and the people who worked with him.
I think that those are perceptive comments about the value of evaluation of programs. I used to think that success was like pornography. You know, you knew it when you see it, but it's kind of hard to define. But I've learned over the years the value of these evaluation, not just in terms of retrospective, but the recommendations for the future, prospective. And it could help us in this case tee up some really meaningful actions to actually make the department's job easier rather than more difficult.
That would be delightful. Okay, moving on.
I'm still trying to get over that quote. It might make the Hall of Fame of commission quotes, but thank you. We'll go on to item 8, receipt of Department of Fish and Game informational items, starting with 8A. And for folks who are speaking on this issue, we're going to take the comment at the very end of it. 8A, receipt of Department of Fish and Game Director's Report, Director Don Cook.
Thank you. Commissioners, I don't want to steal the Chief's thunder a little bit, but in terms of reports, I had the opportunity on the 27th of August to attend our 52nd Warden Academy graduation, and I know a lot of you would have wanted to be there. It was truly inspirational. You've heard Nancy speak over many times, and her crackerjack staff, and that professionalism that you see with Nancy and the people that come before you is just it was just exemplified in that process. So it was really encouraging. Graduated 24 new department warden trainees from that position, and in addition, four other folks that self-sponsored them through this academy that is our first academy at Butte College, and was really well done. And the comments that I heard afterwards from the people involved from the college about how impressed they were with the department's operation, and comparing that to some of their other post classes, they were really impressed. You'll notice in some of our informational items, we are doing our environmental document for our trout stocking program. We're currently doing setting up scoping meetings for those. We have one on September 8th in Sacramento, September 11th in Carson. And then if folks can also, they don't need to attend a scoping meeting, they can go to our website and under public notices, see the link to that document and provide their comments via email if that's more convenient for them. John mentioned Caples Lake. As you're aware, El Dorado Irrigation District, and doing some routine examinations of their operations, discovered a gate that they were concerned about its ability to function. It needed some desperate maintenance, so they're drawing Caples Lake down significantly. We had serious concerns about the fishery in that lake, especially the Mackinac fishery, and we worked with the El Dorado Irrigation District, and I want to compliment C-SPA and Trout Unlimited for their efforts, and we've, as of I believe it was yesterday, had captured 8,000 fish out of there with about 40 or 50 department employees, as well as 70 to 80 volunteers. So again, the volunteers really stepped up and worked well for the department. I want to compliment those organizations that helped us do that and the many volunteers. I was impressed with the size of some of the fish they were bringing out, the 37-inch Mackinaws and, you know, 13-pound brown trout and stuff. So,
how big were the browns?
13 pounds.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So, yeah. But anyway, it's turned a very difficult situation into one that hopefully will maintain that fishery in especially in that community that depends upon it. Salmon disaster funds. Governor Schwarzenegger took the leadership after Congress approved disaster relief funds in the Farm Bill, and got the three governors, Oregon and Washington, to join him and send a letter to PMFC supporting the allocation of those funds. Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission hopes to get the grant from NOAA by mid-September. The paperwork for applying for relief funds will be available then, and as soon as folks return that, they'll start cutting checks. And so good news moving forward there. And that's really all I had to do today. Any questions?
Any questions or comments?
Thanks.
Thank you.
8B, update on enforcement. Chief Nancy Foley.
Good morning, Commissioners. Nancy Foley, Chief of the Law Enforcement Division. Like the director said, we did have that graduation. It was a great day for all of us to put 24 more game wardens out in the field. That will bring us up to about 38 vacancies, and we are in the background process for another 40 game wardens in January to start the academy. So we're on the track of recovery.
Excuse me, Nance. We did bring two flyers I wanted to point out from that graduation. In the middle, there's photos of all the academy graduates, and like Don had said, it was really great. I attended that on behalf of the commissioners, and the faces and the enthusiasm was awesome. We're trying to get some more copies of those pamphlets because there's a lot of info in there for you guys. Sorry.
No, that's good. And just so everybody knows, that doesn't mean that they go from graduation to being a game warden. in a solo game warden position right away. They still have to survive a 12-week field training officer program, and we have experienced somewhere between a 25 and 40% dropout rate at that point. So we're still working on it. We're hoping that our success will be much higher during this FTO cycle due to the fact that it has been our own academy, and we've been able to do a lot of fishing game-specific material throughout the post-certified academy. Other than that, what I'd like to do is introduce the assistant chief for this district, Mike Carrion, and he can give you an update as to what's happening locally.
Thank you, Nancy. Morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you, Chief Foley, and good morning to all the commissioners. Well, this is pretty exciting. I don't come to very many of the commission meetings, and so I have the northern district for fish and game, which is 22 and a half counties of Northern California, basically everything inland. I don't have any of the marine responsibilities. Recently, we've had several opportunities to assist in some unusual activities as well as our normal. So just as a brief recap, we've had wardens at the Caples Lake and Prospect Island rescues recently, both for added personnel as well as security. Things have gone very well there. The marijuana eradication and restoration season has been in full swing, and we've had wardens assisting wherever possible, with an emphasis on restoration of the lands that are getting harvested by the Sheriff's Department. So we've had quite a few wardens doing some of those non-traditional areas. Recently, the salmon season has been on the top of the scale. A lot of fishing activity out there. The wardens monitoring, making sure nobody is keeping any of the salmon in the Sacramento River, and also the Klamath River is pretty much coming into full swing right now. So there's a lot of fishing going on at the mouth of the river and within the lower couple of miles. So there's additional wardens being focused in that area for salmon purposes. Our deer seasons have opened up, and mainly it's all archery so far in my area. We've been operating a few decoys where possible, and it's pretty amazing how many people are actually caught in a, you know, one spot in a county where we put one decoy out, and we've had anywhere from one or two to up to almost a dozen people stopped in one night working the decoys. And our air services have been very helpful as well. We've had the airplane up and not enough wardens to contact all the people that they're seeing working spotlights. So it's pretty incredible how much activity is going on out there.
You know, I got to tell you, Mike, what's pretty incredible is how somebody can actually be so either drunk or incapacitated as to fire at a robo decoy.
Well, you know, the first shot is amazing. It's when they actually fire again because it hasn't dropped yet that we really wonder about.
So, and the shot goes clang.
Incredible.
You know, I mean, good Lord.
It's like, do it again. It's still standing. So, yeah, it's not always, you know, it's interesting anyway. I did want to share a situation that occurred on the Dove opener with all of you to close this summary. Warden Sean Pirtle, who was, by the way, our Officer of the Year from last year, had a couple of places that they had found some bait for doves. And so he went in and with the local squad worked a location in the morning where they found four people hunting over safflower, and they freely admitted that they put it out there. Some of them had over limits, and so they were sighted, and they moved on from that point. By the time they got to the second location, they figured everybody had gone home and there wouldn't be anybody left there, but there were still people out hunting over bait, so they made another case there. And so they got some more over limits at that location. And they were tied up the rest of the day with miscellaneous stops, and Sean had related to me that he was with the lieutenant, and they were coming home. It was around 10:30 at night. And the lieutenant said that, you know, this was one of those days that everything seemed to be working out well for them. The only thing that could be better is if they made a case on somebody loading up a deer in the back of their truck. It was 5 minutes after that they were driving down the highway, and the truck in front of them, they had some dark material on the bumper, and they got up a little bit closer and looked at it and said, boy, that looks like blood. They landed up stopping that vehicle, and there was a 4x3 buck that the person had just poached, and they happened to drive up upon that and made a out-of-season deer case on top of it. So I told them the warden gods were smiling upon them, but, you know, in some way it's nice to hear that they were able to be successful. On the other hand, it's unfortunate that much activity is going on out there to the detriment of wildlife. So that's what's been happening, a brief summary of the Northern District. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Are we involved in this investigation related to the bear gallbladder taking up here on by outside of Truckee?
Yes, and in fact, I don't know if Chief Foley wanted to add to that. She mentioned something to me yesterday about it. I know that the circumstances are extremely unusual. I guess there were a pair of surgical gloves that were there.
Yeah, you might want to explain. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I don't know if the other commissioners
I'm
are.
Not.
So, okay.
There was a bear that was located off the highway when the wardens went there to go look at it. It appears that what happened was somebody surgically removed the gallbladder from the bear. And I don't believe anything else was taken from that particular
animal. And it had been killed by being hit by a car?
Hit by a car is what our understanding
is. But then surgical
And then somebody went in there. And they actually took the gallbladder out. So, of course, the big concern here is the commercialization of that bear part. Because the gloves were there, I believe they're doing some forensics on that to try to find out if they can match it to somebody. But it just shows that is rampant out there, that there is a market for that type of thing, marketing of wildlife, and a major concern for us.
As you probably know, commercialization of wildlife parts is legal in some states, Idaho, for example. I don't know what efforts, maybe Chief Foley would like to address this, but it's always seemed to me that as long as this sort of thing is illegal in some states, you're going to have a market. And it might be helpful if we address this at the North American, the association meetings to try to get a consistent policy across the states, difficult though that may be.
Yeah, it is going to be a problem as long as there are some places where it is legal. But I don't know what the status is with working with other states on putting an end to it. But with the variety of different opinions out there throughout the U.S., it's going to be very difficult for everybody to be on the same page. But I know some efforts are being made for education in that area.
Why does Idaho allow that? Do you know?
The Idaho legislature has considered that as long as wildlife is legally taken, there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to commercialize certain parts. It's not a position that's shared by very many states, but some states in the Rockies continue to permit commercialization, and it just means that these markets can survive. And it makes the job of federal officers more difficult because then, of course, any of these parts in commerce are deemed to be from the states where they're legal to commercialize. So
one assumes there's not enough biology differential to be able to DNA that out. I take it not.
Well, the DNA analysis from the lab is getting very specific in certain areas. It depends on how much samples, how many samples they have, and I don't know what they have from other states, but I know with our deer, for instance, it's getting down to almost a herd identification. So I'm not sure. I haven't heard the latest on bears. I don't know if Chief Foley has that, but there is the potential to get to that point. Whether we have enough data yet or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that might get us out from under it. Because if there is a differential, discernible differential between the bear populations, and you could nail them on it. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any further questions, comments? Great. Thank you.
Item 8C, update on Pacific Fishery Management Council issues. Maria Vojkovic.
Thank you. Maria Vojkovic with the Marine Region. Very quickly, the council meeting begins Sunday afternoon with a chairman's briefing and lasts through next Friday, and it is taking place in Boise, Idaho this time, and I gave you a brief update last month on the kinds of issues on the agenda. It seems to be a fairly light as council meetings go this time, so I'll have a report for you in October, the October meeting.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just one comment, Maria. I received from your office the list of draft policy guidance for IFQ programs that the Marine Region has developed. We talked about this, I think you briefed us on this at a previous meeting, but I just wanted to say that I appreciate the thought that's gone into this. particularly things like the department supporting quota shares for harvesters only rather than processors and that sort of thing. I'd like to see more. I mean, I don't know what's appropriate here. I'd love to throw the weight of the commission behind the recommendations that you've developed on things like this. Since we're supposed to be the policymaking body for the department, seems like you ought to have more support from the commission on documents like this. But whatever help we can be, I'd like to provide that.
Maria.
Thank you. This has been, for the Marine Region, an issue that we've identified that we would like to have conversations with the Commission about relative to other marine policies. Some of the issues that we've brought before you before have been on allocation issues. And if we can have those kinds of conversations before we need to make decisions relative to allocations, like in our groundfish fishery, it certainly helps at the council meeting. It helps the public understand what we're doing and how we're dealing with this. So it's been on kind of the whiteboard over on the side. When we get an opportunity, we've got several items like that that we'd like to even just bring to you to see whether you're interested in grappling with them, and then what kind of a process might we use for doing that. So, yes, it is something we find that is useful to have these kinds of policies written down so that we can share them. And we do need to develop some additional ones.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner Sutton.
This is obviously something that once we get back to a regular schedule of Marine Resources Committee meetings, that we could use that forum to help. And once we hire a Marine advisor, which we're still trying to do, that person could work with you and your staff to tee these things up.
Great.
Thank you, Maria. Questions, comments? No.
Go ahead.
8D, update on groundfish harvest monitoring and emergency action. Maria.
I'm back.
You didn't do a 360.
No, I'm back. I didn't go far this time. I have brought the issue of possible in-season action to you in the last two commission meetings, just kind of giving a head up to you and the public that there may be a need for action. And so I want to update you on what has taken place since the last commission meeting. Yellow-eye rockfish, which is one of the 92 species in the groundfish plan, is our most constraining species for the state of California, both commercial and recreational fishing. The council allocates or sets aside a portion of the OY every year for the various fisheries and sectors of the fisheries. And California has, for our recreational fishery, a harvest guideline, which is our target that we do not want to exceed as incidental catch in other fisheries, because the species is prohibited, of no more than 2.1 metric tons. It is an overfished species, which means it is less than 25% of its virgin biomass, and it's an extremely slow-growing species, and its expected time to rebuild to a healthy population is more than 60 years. So it is a challenge to provide fishing opportunities for the public and for our commercial fisheries when we have species like that we're trying to rebuild. So that's the background of where we start. When we do recreational management on a two-year cycle, so the season for 2008 was set in 2006. The data from our sampling was not available to us until early in 2008. When we looked at the data, we found that with the season structure that we had last year and what was on the books for this year, we were going to exceed our harvest guideline if everyone fished the same way they did last year, because we exceeded our harvest guideline by four times. So we took 8 tons instead of 2 tons. The department staff developed some solutions to this in a proactive manner discussed it with the director. The director decided he would like to have some public comment and discussions and solutions from the public. And so we held a meeting earlier this year, and in that meeting, the public wanted us to continue with the current season, that they would try and avoid yellow-eye rockfish areas. If the department committed to providing identification flyers and other means of giving the public the information they needed to avoid these species, that he would leave the season open until and if tracking of the catches and projections of estimates wouldn't exceed the harvest guideline of 2.1 metric tons. So the department instituted several changes to our website, to our tracking tools in season, and consequently by early August, we had already estimated 1.3 metric tons of yellow eye had been taken. And when we project forward through the rest of the season, we found that we were more than likely going to exceed our 2.1 metric tons. So the director did decide that the since he had committed to not exceed the harvest guideline, that we would take the director's use the director's authority under emergency action and close the recreational fishery on a part of the state as of September 2nd. The data was based on almost 4,000 interviews with anglers on the North Coast, and when we looked at the distribution of the catch along the coast, we found that more than 84% of that catch of yellow eye occurred north of Point Arena. So in order to minimize the fishing impacts on the entire state, the director chose to close groundfish fishing north of Point Arena beginning September 2nd. The process that we used to do that was to notify the public in the middle of August about the proposal. We filed emergency regulatory package with the Office of Administrative Law. We held a public meeting in Trinidad on August 21st, and the Office of Administrative Law reviewed the regulatory package and approved it in a very short period of time, actually. It was kind of miraculous. And the department issued a confirming press release last Friday. So I wanted to inform you of what we did and how we got to where we recommended to the director and what his decision was. So it's unfortunate, but it's important to manage for our overfished species in that manner.
Thank you, Marie. Any questions or comments? Nope. Thank you. Oh, just for everyone's edification, as soon as we're through with item 8, and that's all of the items in item 8 plus public commentary, we're going to take about a 10-minute break.
Item 8E, update on preparation for 2009 midwinter and summer Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies professional conferences, which are going to occur here in California.
Hi, Jordan.
Good morning, Commissioners. Jordan Traverso with the Department of Fish and Game. And I hope you'll give me a pass because I brought my far-seeing glasses and not my close-seeing glasses, so this should go really well. The Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies is a regional section of the National Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. The difference is WAFWA and AFWA. We're talking about WAFWA, and it represents 23 states and Canadian provinces spanning from Alaska to Texas and Saskatchewan to Hawaii, an area covering nearly 3.7 million square miles of some of North America's most wild and scenic country, inhabited by more than 1,500 premier wildlife species. WAFWA is a strong advocate of the rights of states and provinces to manage fish and wildlife within their borders. The association has been a key organization in promoting the principles of sound resource management and the building of partnerships at the regional, national, and international levels in order to enhance wildlife conservation efforts and the protection of associated habitats in the public interest. And I should have a slideshow up here. WAFL holds a midwinter conference and an annual conference in the summer every year to allow department and commission leadership to share ideas, shape fish and wildlife policy, to acquire increased federal funding to our many programs, and to suggest changes to policy at the federal level through legislation. The meetings are restricted to those that work within government and fish and wildlife agencies. A number of standing committees and work groups on a plethora of different issues, from communications to wild sheep to internal staffing issues among wildlife agencies, confer here and take the ideas to the national level at the AFWA annual meeting. Every year, the WAFWA conference rotates host states, which is why I'm here. Approximately every 20 years, California hosts the midwinter and summer conference, and 2009 is our year. Included in the conference planning are peripheral activities and networking opportunities for sponsors and attendees. Prior to my arrival and in order to prepare for the 2009 conferences, I'm very thankful that Bernadette Fees in the Office of Communications, Education, and Outreach took a number of important steps to get the department well on its way, including securing a meeting planner and narrowing down the sites where we'll hold the conferences. Earlier this year, we scouted the site she picked out, and we secured the Marines Memorial Club Hotel in San Francisco for the Midwinter Conference, which will take place Thursday through Sunday, January 8th through 11. This conference is for directors and commissioners only. Other staff are extremely limited in attendance. The Marines Memorial Club is a hotel. I'm sorry. The Marines Memorial Club and Hotel is located at Sutter and Mason Streets in San Francisco in the heart of Union Square. The hotel is run by the Marines Memorial Association, which works to maintain a living memorial honoring veterans of the United States Armed Forces, including regular and reserve components, the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Merchant Marine and the reserves, and to educate and perpetuate the achievements and the sacrifices of these veterans, and to aid and assist these veterans. The hotel is full of artifacts and relics from servicemen and women through the years, and one floor is a touching dedication to the men and women who've lost their lives in the current Middle East conflict. It is our hope that bringing the other states and provinces to a place like San Francisco will help them realize the amazing stressors our fish and wildlife resources deal with on a daily basis. Not only will they see a city bustling with people, as you can see in this slide, but we'll have an opportunity to show them how we manage marine life in the bay and on our coast, which very few other states in WAFWA have to concern themselves with. We also hope to plan one of the peripheral trips to Angel Island State Park to highlight our marine and coastal responsibilities, all the while showing them some of California's rich history. For the annual meeting July 11 through 16, which includes directors, commissioners, and other agency leadership, habitat managers, wildlife specialists, enforcement chiefs, etc., we've secured the Hyatt Newport Beach adjacent to the Upper Newport Ecological Reserve. The Hyatt, let's see, on this slide with the red dot, is right next to Newport's Back Bay, which shows the uniqueness of California by contrasting the many issues of the bay against the commerce and development there, and the ecological reserve against, say, Disneyland. We hope to utilize the newly rebuilt Back Bay Science Center, which is the blue dot on this map, for a peripheral trip to show the reserve. And the Back Bay Science Center is a brand new department facility. The next steps that we face involve picking a theme, selecting and securing speakers for the plenary sessions, arranging the logistics of the meeting, scheduling and planning the various activities, general planning of the meeting, and fundraising. As I mentioned before, we're working with an event planner who works with the other regional fish and wildlife conferences and does the national one. Her name's Cindy Delaney. This conference is completely supported by both the WAFWA organization and sponsorships. No general fund money is used. In picking a theme, we want to pick one that incorporates the challenges I've discussed, because we feel so many other states in this organization are bound to be facing this changing environment that we currently deal with. In a matter of years, their states are going to be dealing with what we're dealing with, is what I'm saying. They're going to be growing more populous, leading to further development, which will begin to encroach on the safety and habitat of their natural resources. And we also realize that the right theme brings in the right sponsors. So we hope to ask for your help in securing speakers that will echo the theme that we choose. So should you have any suggestions or contacts for dynamic speakers, we'd be really grateful to have those. And we also realize that the right speakers will also bring in the right sponsors. And this is going to be a really big conference to plan, and it's going to be we're going to need a lot of involvement. And I hope that we can count on commitment both from department leadership and commissioners and commission staff to help us showcase our state to the other states in the association as we host the conferences in 2009. Any questions?
Thank you, Jordan. Any questions, comments? I'm amazed that we were able to get a hotel anywhere near Newport Beach that would work for the budget. That's astonishing.
Yeah, actually, it's surprising. They had to do a group rate instead of a state rate, but they are, I mean, it's a very comparable state rate. So
yeah, I would have thought we would have been somewhere near Riverside.
But well, we anyway. Looked all around Anaheim, and there was, it just didn't, it would be too far out to go back to Newport, so we decided, and we really wanted to utilize the Back Bay Science Center.
Well, it'd be fun
right
to park the state cars next to Ferraris. That'll be
well,
delightful.
Well, actually, in the Hyatt's the only one that had an airport shuttle that was free, so.
Okay. Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you.
Any others?
I have Cabazon trip limit that I think Sankey wanted to mention. Does that sound right? Or was that
for
someone
other?
Else that wanted that under other?
Other than, I think the issue there is that we closed the, we achieved our harvest on Cabazon. That was closed
you did.
A
so
while
that's
back. Yeah.
Okay. Or did I screw that up? Here comes Maria.
Maria's giving you the head nod to be quiet.
Straighten out that master guy.
Sorry. Maria Vojkovic with the Marine Region. In Title 14, you have established Cabazon trip limits for our commercial fishery. And the month of September and October, I believe, is one of the highest established in regulation. And what happens is we track during the year where we are relative to the harvest guideline, and then we change the trip limits for the month of September and October and reduce those. And that's to try and extend the season as far as possible.
Okay. Great. Any further questions? Sankey?
Yeah. I did have one other quick item. Just to let you know, Devin Bartley, who you've met, spoken before you, is actively working on the new Aquaculture Advisory Committee that works for the director. They are scheduling a new meeting. I believe it's September 24th, and I'll get the commission some information if any of you are interested in participating and watching that committee. And its primary purpose really is now that it's active again, is to really review how the department and the state deals with aquaculture issues with input from the industry. So I know that's of particular interest with at least one of the two of the commissioners, and so we'll keep you in the loop and let you know if there's any opportunities and, of course, any products that come out of it for your review. Because
okay,
it's an area that we really need, whether it's restricted species like barramundi, or mariculture in our bays. I mean, there's a lot of issues we need to wrestle with, including offshore aquaculture, which is the new frontier that, you know, the feds have no rules at all, and we're kind of in the position of almost establishing rules to deal with it, and it's a very awkward spot. So we're reaching out to industry and the academic institutions to figure out how do we deal with this? And so that's some of the things they'll be wrestling with. I just wanted you to be aware of that.
Yeah, those pens are actually rampant in Mexico and in northern Baja, and in fact have proven to be hazards to navigation.
It was an interesting story there on the internet
about
where
a
very large yacht ended up in the middle of one of those.
Yeah, it was a 65-foot Viking sport fisherman ended up in the middle of a net.
You sure it was unintentional? The fishing's pretty good in there.
Yeah. It would have been great had they not ruined the 65-foot yacht's running gear, and they had to be towed back. I think
as Maria can probably tell you, the issue of tuna ranching in the U.S. and Mexico is controversial at the federal level as well, because in many cases they catch the juveniles in the U.S. and then transship them, tow them across into Mexican waters, which requires a federal permit. It's also my understanding that industry is in the decline, that some of those pens have gone away, although there's still quite a bit of tuna ranching in the vicinity of Ensenada. The federal government, as you probably know, Sankey, in June I moderated a panel on aquaculture at Capitol Hill Oceans Week in Washington, D.C., and the head of NOAA's aquaculture program was one of the panelists. The Bush administration has been trying to get a bill passed for the last 5 years at least on to promote offshore aquaculture, including subsidizing it. The bill has been stalled in the Senate Commerce Committee because the administration's bill didn't contain any environmental standards like the Magnuson Act has.
And so it seems unlikely that it's going to come out this year. So you're right. And for now, the federal government has no standards, no regulatory regime for offshore aquaculture. They do have a draft one. I mean, the intent is to promulgate a regulatory regime at some point in the future, but it'll be up to the new administration to do that. They're just about to release a major publication on prospects for offshore aquaculture in the United States. We've been, a number of us have been suggesting to them that they'd look to California's regulatory regime and legislation as a great model for the way the federal government ought to think about aquaculture. And I know they've been doing that. So it's still very much in play.
Thank you.
And as you may also be aware, very quickly, there is an institution that's interested in establishing a rockfish aquaculture operation in federal waters right outside of state waters, which has put you and us squarely in this kind of interesting predicament.
Right.
And you may be seeing soon a proposal on how to deal with that.
Good.
Because we may be there before the federal government is.
Good. So. Okay. That's it. So now we have speaker. Do we have speaker cards?
Yes, we have three speaker cards. Jim Martin, followed by Walt Manzel, followed by Paul Weakland.
Thank you, Commissioners. Jim Martin, Recreational Fishing Alliance. I wanted to comment on the PFMC report and the rockfish closure and just convey to you the real frustration and anger that's going on up on the North Coast, and particularly I've been dealing with some charter captains that have, you know, put decades of their lives building up this business, and they're seeing it evaporate in front of their eyes. And when the federal government limited us to 2.1 metric tons, I think a lot of people didn't realize that we don't really have a fishery north of Point Arena with that low of a cap on our bycatch. We're not retaining these fish. So the other point I've made before the commission is that the rockfish conservation area closes about 90% of the habitat for yellow-eye rockfish. They live traditionally in about 300-350 feet of water. So we're catching stragglers in 60 feet of water. And any fishing activity by the recreational sector up there is not going to impact long-term the rebuilding process. So we've got an arbitrary, irrational federal system that does not take into account area closures. And so we've done everything that we can to get off of these fish. We participated in the department's efforts to get the ID charts out into the field, and we need to do more work on that in the campgrounds, because it's not the locals that aren't aware of how to identify them. It only takes a few people coming up for a vacation in a campground, not familiar with the rules or the identification of these fish. They come in and they land them, and the surf sampling is not built to accurately define such a low level and low number. So by multiplying and sampling a few events of people bringing fish across the dock really kill us. So we need to figure a solution to this to get us back in the water. We've got no salmon fishing. I don't know what to tell you, but I'm not going to jump up and down. But I think you'll be hearing from the public up there that we've got nothing left to manage. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next speaker.
Walt Manzel, followed by Paul Weakland.
Thank you, Commissioners. Walt Manzel, representing California Rifle and Pistol Association. Just to follow up to Chief Foley's report under the enforcement stuff. First, on the sale of wild animal parts, we identified many years ago major trade routes, so to speak, out of Canada, flowing through Washington, Oregon, and into California, and going through basically Port of L.A., LAX, for shipment into the Orient. One case I was involved in was parts of at least 40 different black bears. So that still exists, I suspect. And I believe Canada's also, like Idaho, that up in that, at least British Columbia, the sale of the parts is not a violation.
Commissioner Sutton, you have a comment on that?
When I was a federal wildlife officer, I followed a suspect one time from Idaho to Vancouver, British Columbia, with a suitcase load of bear gallbladders and so forth. There's certainly an active trade route that goes through the Asian communities of the West Coast and into the to Asia itself. It's, of course, outlawing this sort of thing doesn't mean that that trade stops. It just means that it goes underground. So,
and maybe becomes more valuable.
Yeah.
Not maybe, Walt.
And the second point, Chief Foley and John Carlson have been a little bit self-effacing. I, too, had the pleasure of attending the Game Warden graduation ceremonies last week in Paradise from Butte College. And among other things, members of that class set new all-time records in Butte College for several of the classes that they conduct there, firearms, crime scene investigation, report writing, different things that the warden, that all law enforcement officers are tested on as they go through that post-academy. And members of the Game Warden graduating staff set new all-time records for that college in those subjects. And it wasn't just one person rising to the top. It was usually two or three or four persons very closely ranked at the top. And it was a real pleasure. The thin green line is just a little less thin this week, and it was very impressive. Thank you.
Thank you, Walt.
Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Let's talk about aquaculture and the lessons learned. Well, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to learn all the lessons because you purged the files. You've, eliminated all the failures in the records. You don't want to show the ecological sabotage, the environmental terrorism, and the crimes against nature that have been committed by these aquaculture facilities and these fish hatcheries. The diseases that they have brewed up, conjured up, and released into our waters. The fact that they have negated and denuded areas of spawning in our state. We know that there's a mechanism in nature when there's too much genetic diversity present that all spawning stops and large fish die-offs occur. It's nature's way of cleansing and purifying itself. But nowhere in your records do you want to show that. It's not reflected in any of your studies. No, 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 no. And we only want to study the things that we want to come out right. Whenever the study doesn't work out right, then we'll get a new study until it finally does. And, you know, like the withering syndrome, all the millions that we've spent and the decades investigating it, we're going to leave it a mystery. Because if we don't leave it a mystery, it makes the Fish and Game's abalone enhancement program look pretty fouled up. So it's kind of very derogatory and disrespectful to the state of California to allow aquaculture to continue in this manner without voicing and exposing the problems that were occurred in the past rather than sweeping it under the carpets. But all the staff are well aware of this and what they are doing to help promote aquaculture. That is all.
Thank you, Mr. Brinkman. Okay, that's it? Yeah, any further comments or questions? Okay, we're going to take a break, but before we take a break, I might announce to everyone that we're going to allow immediately after our break anyone who counted on the Fish and Game Commission meeting starting at 10 o'clock and therefore missed out on public forum this morning. Even though we posted it, we thought in all places there was a glitch and a discrepancy where it actually showed that we were starting at 10. So anyone who is here for public forum and who wishes to make a comment, we will allow that as soon as we return. So as of right now, then we stand in recess for 15 minutes. We don't have anybody from the department back. Are they around?
They were out the back door, John. John, they were out the back
door. Back door?
Yeah, Maria's here. Okay, Maria's.
Did I actually say nobody from the department? Oh, Maria. What we plan to do is run through the rest of the agenda items because we believe that most of them are informational items and things of that nature, and we probably are going to hold off breaking for lunch until we're through with the agenda for today, which we think we'll be able to get through. So, and that luncheon will be an executive session. So we'll do that. So in any event, John, take it away. We had no speaker cards for those we thought might have missed public forum this morning. So we're going to proceed with the agenda.
Item number 9, receipt of commission informational items. I just have a couple of things for commissioners. One is that on Monday, I'm going to be flying to New York for the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies meeting. That's the meeting that has all 50 states and several Canadian provinces. The directors get together once a year nationally, and the commissioners from Western states are trying to establish a commissioners committee at, you know, recognized at the national level. And so we have a whole day dedicated to a commissioner forum there. And they're trying to get as much support for that. So I felt it was pretty important for me to be there. Plus, as Jordan said, the same woman whose company that's putting on that that meeting is putting on the California meetings next year. Speaking of next year's meeting, the WAFA 09, I'm on the steering committee with the department. It'll be taking quite a bit of my time to help get that rolling, and I'm very interested in it, and I think it's something we really need to be supportive of. I'll probably use at least one or two other staff members, but I want to just put it out there for discussion that the amount of time it's going to take is probably going to impact whether we have a Fish and Game Commission dinner, awards dinner next year that we have been talking about. The AFWA is probably going to be taking more time away from us to set that up. Now, the WAFWA, Western Association, has not been in California since, I believe it was 93 or 94. So it's a really huge event. It's a lot of expectation, and the commission traditionally is heavily involved. So I just want to, and I can talk to the president and the vice president offline about, you know, the consequences of that impact in the possible commission dinner, and how we can maybe handle that.
Right.
That's all I had under staff reports at this point.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the commissioners? No. Okay.
Item 10, subcommittee reports and recommendations. Marine Resources Committee.
Commissioner Sutton.
We have been trying to schedule the next Marine Resources Committee meeting, which primarily thanks to the difficulty of my schedule and President Rogers has proven challenging. However, the good news is that I believe we're going to be able to hold a Marine Resources Committee meeting on December 10th. That is at least our intention. That is the day before the December Commission meeting in Sacramento, so we'll hold the MRC meeting in Sacramento. We will probably co-sponsor with COMPASS, the Communications Partnership for Science of the Sea, a science briefing on innovative approaches to fishery management. So stay tuned for that. This is all unconfirmed as of yet, so we will, of course, announce it through the usual mechanisms. But just pencil in on your calendars December 10th, which I believe is a Wednesday, for the Commission's Marine Resources Committee meeting. We are also attempting to hire a marine advisor. That search is ongoing, and we'll keep you informed of that. And as I mentioned before, under another agenda item, we will, with any luck, I guess we'll find out next week, we'll be initiating in a lessons learned review of the MLMA, the Marine Life Management Act, in conjunction with the California Ocean Protection Council.
Thank you.
And I'd add to that, Commissioner Sutton, we have acquired a list of across the nation universities that have, were considered above average marine programs, and we're going to be sending out an announcement to all of them to try to see if there's any grad students or postdocs that would be interested in applying for the marine advisor. And that's something I'm working with Adriana on. We've got a list from the department, and I think a nationwide search is worth, you know, doing.
Okay.
Don't send that letter to Humboldt or UC Davis.
No, we were. Anyway, I'm not going to say anything. I'll get killed. Okay. Al Tauscher?
Yeah, on the Tauscher Preserving Hunting and Sport Fishing Opportunities Advisory Committee, we have a date for October 1st listed for our next meeting. And we're planning on having Commissioner Kellogg and Commissioner Richards present for at least part of that day. That's the Wednesday before our next meeting.
October 1st.
October 1st.
And that's all I have at this point.
Okay. We have some speaker cards?
Yeah, we have one person who has a speaker name for the last issue of receipt of information items on this one. So, Paul, you could speak on 9 and 10 right now. You have aggregate, you've used 7 minutes so far. You've got a total of 3 left for the day.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland, I'd like to remind you that we have submitted both oral and written questions to the Marine Resources Committee for years, specifically about limited entry fishing, fees associated with that, landing tax, and how to support self-supporting fishing activities. I hope that we will have these answers upon the next meeting. And also let us remind everyone that there's 147 marine specialists that work for the state of California in the fish and game to give advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merkin. Item 11. Oh, I'm sorry. Any comments or questions from the commission? No? Hearing none. 11.
Receipt of federal agencies informational items. Tony Morton must have just got here. Perfect timing.
Tony, good timing. Actually, we ran the entire meeting around corresponding to your arrival.
Oh, that's wonderful. Actually, you probably don't know, but I do log into the website. So wherever I'm at, I'm in the area and I'm watching.
Good.
Not in a bad way.
Are you big Tony, brother?
Yeah, President Rogers, Commissioners, Tony Morton with NOAA Fisheries. We're very close right now to publishing a proposed rule in the Federal Register that would designate critical habitat for the southern distinct population segment of North American green sturgeon. That particular population of green sturgeon is generally defined as those fish that spawn south of the Eel River in California. We listed the green sturgeon as threatened under the Endangered Species Act on April 7th in 2006 and asked for public input at that time to help us identify critical habitat for the sturgeon. Considering all of the information gathered, we're now proposing that the following areas be designated as critical habitat. Those coastal U.S. marine waters that are up to 110 meters or 361 feet deep, from and including Monterey Bay, north to Cape Flattery, Washington, including the Strait of Juan de Fuca and the U.S. border with Canada, the Sacramento, Lower Feather, and Lower Yuba Rivers, the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta, and the Sassoon, San Pablo, and San Francisco Bays in California, the Lower Columbia River Estuary in Washington, Humboldt Bay, California, Coos and Winchester Bays in Oregon, and Wallapa Bay and Grays Harbor in Washington. The areas proposed for designation comprise approximately 325 miles of freshwater river habitat, 1,058 square miles of estuary habitat, and 136 square miles of habitat within the Yolo and Sutter bypasses, which are part of the Sacramento River Flood Control Project. And once again, the public may submit comments, and the way to do that is through a website at www.regulations.gov, or they can go to NOAA Fisheries Regional website at swr.nmfs.noaa.gov. And I thought I'd call your attention to a program that NOAA has. It's called Be Wet. It stands for Bay Watershed Education and Training. Be Wet awards grants to schools and nonprofit groups to assist them with providing educational experiences to students and professional development for teachers. Grants totaling just under $700,000 were recently awarded to 13 schools and groups in the Monterey Bay area to support education projects focused on the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary along the central coast in California. The projects will take place in 6 counties and include projects where the participants will learn how to restore and maintain riparian vegetation, mitigation and restoration of polluted creeks, and collection and analysis of water quality in areas that are affected by urban, agricultural, and equestrian sources. Be Wet is just one of many NOAA education programs that we hope will educate and motivate citizens to do things that will help sustain our oceans and coasts. And then my final item, I just wanted to acknowledge and appreciate the comments earlier on the aquaculture proposed legislation, Commissioner Sutton and Sonke Mastrup, your comments. But I will say that the legislation that was proposed by the administration and submitted to Congress did contain provisions for environmental requirements. The Secretary of Interior would be in charge of developing the regulations for implementing aquaculture in federal waters, and along with that would go the environmental requirements. And of course, anytime you do a major federal action like that, NEPA comes into play, the National Environmental Policy Act. So there'll be at least a programmatic and possibly several site-specific major EISs that would need to be prepared, and that would consider alternatives for either avoiding or reducing adverse environmental impacts. So, but you are right, it's going to be up to the next administration and Congress to implement that, because it's taken quite a while. So
far. Hang on, let me make sure I understand what you said. So in other words, it wasn't necessarily that the Bush administration left them out, because they were inherent in what you would have to do to implement in any event.
It may be that there weren't specifics in there. That's left to the future processes involving NEPA and the actual regulatory development process. I'm not sure if that was the nature of the comment, the basis for it.
Well, just to be clear, the Magnuson Act, as you know, contains a number of very specifically articulated national standards for fisheries conservation and management. The proposed legislation submitted by the Bush administration on offshore aquaculture did not. Instead, the NOAA aquaculture program, when we raised that issue, said we intend to do that by regulation, which of course is possible. But many in the Congress and the NGO community wanted to see those standards in the statute itself, like we have in the Magnuson Act. So I think that's what Congress is working on now. And
I see. Is that normal? Is that what's normally inserted?
Well, certainly following the example of the Magnuson Act, I think we can expect to see that in an aquaculture bill when it comes out. The Magnuson Act national standards have been really important in the implementation of that statute, and they've been revised several times over the last decade. So it's reasonable to expect to see similar national standards for how we'll roll out a national offshore aquaculture program. If the standards are in the statute, that means Congress has spoken on in terms of what's important, and it isn't left up to regulation, which of course can change much more easily depending on who's promulgating the regulations.
Yeah, I think I see the nature of the politics, because sometimes it's been our experience this commission that maybe it's not so good to have that in the that specificity in the legislation, because that often doesn't necessarily, it's more political than it is actually technical. So maybe it wouldn't be so bad idea to leave it up to NOAA, but I can understand where the politics lie on this. All right.
I was just a little bit concerned that there not be a misinterpretation, that there's not going to be
understand.
A misinterpretation of environment.
And I'm glad you said that, Tony. Any further comments or questions? Nope.
Okay. Thanks.
I think we do.
We have item. I'm sorry. We do have a public speaker card. Paul Weakland, item 11.
No, he's got two.
He's got 2 minutes left.
Again, commissioners, Paul Weakland. We have asked both orally and written many questions under this item. Yet, for years, none of the answers come, such as the failed policy of Mammal Protection Act, sea otters, black abalones, white abalones, military operations that have fouled and destroyed habitat off of our coast. The whale issue and the global sonar, and all these questions are never answered. They have just been hush, be quiet, save my time.
Thank you, Mr. Wiggum. 12.
Receipt of legal counsel informational items.
Nothing. 13.
So I want a clarification here. Since there's nothing said, no public comment on that, right?
That's correct.
The button's right there on the end of your microphone. No, it's
right there on the handle.
Right. There.
Actually, even though I don't have any items. You wouldn't be the first to say that.
Yeah, see what happens when a lawyer gets near a mic?
Y'all, thank you. Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you for that support.
Deborah Barnes, Attorney General's Office. Even though I don't have any specific or any general comment reports at this time, if there's a member of the public that wishes to speak on this issue, I would suggest you allow that
go
time.
Ahead. Do we have a public speaker? Paul Weakland.
That's it. Commissioners, Paul Weakland, we have submitted both written and oral questions. You have given the assignment to the last Attorney General to come up with the true status and history of sea otters in California. We are still waiting for that summary. Will that wait forever, right?
Thank you, Mr. Wiggum. Item 13.
Further consideration and possible adoption of the 2009 meeting schedule. The proposed schedule should be up on the board any second now. And we did have a request from one commissioner to show the last proposed schedule, which was Thursday-Friday meetings also. At the last meeting, we received direction. We received direction last meeting from the commission to explore the option of moving all our meetings to Wednesday, Thursdays. So that right there is the Wednesday, Thursday version. Received a fair amount of positive input on this. There are some folks that don't like going to Wednesdays and Thursdays, but we wanted to get an approval from the commission either way, because we're finding out in California right now with 37-plus million people that we have to get our locations and the state rate for our hotels. We have to be planning a year in advance. We really need to get this thing locked up today if possible so that our staff can start getting rooms and hotels booked up.
Okay. Any comments by commissioners? Commissioner Sutton, I know, has one.
I've been concerned about the desire to go to a Wednesday-Thursday meeting schedule, because I guess my main concern is that we risk blowing the entire week. That is to say, with a Tuesday travel day and a Friday travel day, potentially, that's most of the week. Thursday and Friday at least limits the damage, if you will, to 2 days of the week, or possibly three. I'd be comfortable continuing to meet on Thursday and Friday rather than going to a Wednesday-Thursday schedule.
Any other comments? Commissioner Augusta?
You know, I'm willing to stay with that, Commissioner Sutton, but I think there were also advantages to not trying to travel on Fridays. What I find is often the commission staff and other people are busy trying to get away early on Friday, and we don't conclude our business necessarily. With as much thorough discussion as I'd like to see, we're in a rush to get on to our weekend plans and people's travel arrangements. It is difficult for the rest of us to especially when we're in Southern California, for me to get flights back up to Northern California on Fridays is a little bit of a challenge in the afternoon as people take off for the weekend. But that was my thought, that it actually saved time for some of us, but I understand that any kind of change, I mean, we need all five commissioners to weigh in and make sure that it works and that we can conduct our business and make sure we conclude the discussions we need to have. Because I do find often people are wrapping up, they've got other commitments on Fridays, and we've got to get out of here by noon, and we maybe don't deliberate as well as we might otherwise do that.
Commissioner Kellogg, do you have any thoughts about that?
Just that I'm willing to entertain changing away from the Friday concept as well, because it's really difficult in a lot of instances for me to make a Friday meeting.
Yeah, I agree. I have immense sympathy for your comment, Mike, but Friday is very difficult. It's very difficult for staff. It's difficult for the department, and certainly difficult for the commissioners. Because often, and I have a lot of sympathy for Commissioner Gustafson's comments, you know, because we get to a point where, you know, many of us have one airplane flight in the evening that we can make, and then that's it, and we're doomed until the following morning, and that just really, really changes the dynamic. And if you're in the middle of the week, it really is much, it is much easier. Then it may be bleed over to a Friday, you know, travel, but at least, you know, you're conducting the business appropriately, and I think with more regard to the specificity of the issues, so takes the pressure off of it. Not that we don't complete our business, we do complete our business, but it would be much better with less pressure, I think. So,
our AGP guru over here, Steve Matthew, has asked to speak also on this issue. I guess is that true? See if the microphone will work for you.
If it doesn't, we don't want to hear from you.
Well, here's one trick.
Oh,
it's a high static room. If you touch the mic, it's going to snap every time. So if you can get away with not touching the mics, it's going to be a lot quieter for all of us. My input is...
Steve, if you would be so kind.
Steve Matthew, AGP Video out of Morro Bay, California. We are centrally located, so striking distance is fair in any direction. My input would be that Thursday, Friday does work out better for us Tuesdays, and it's not, you know, it's not really of concern to you, but Tuesdays for us is a high-impact day in the county of San Luis Obispo. For instance, we had 7 meetings Tuesday night. Wednesday travel day for me is a lot better. And I have asked repeatedly, and I'm working both commissions because both of you guys did at the same time, the Coastal Commission forever and a day for the length of its existence met on the second week of the month forever from 1976 or whenever they started. You guys met the first week of the month from 1860 whenever until I actually started doing business with you, and then you started dodging back and forth between the first week and the second week, which is causing a pretty substantial overlap about 50% of the year, to where the Coastal Commission and the Fish and Game Commission are landing right on top of each other. Now, I can handle it, but it does split, you know, split attentions, and I was real happy when we first started out, and the Fish and Game Commission was Thursday and Friday of the first week of the month, every single month, and the Coastal Commission was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of the second week of the month, each and every month. The closer we can get back to that, the more efficient it works out from our aspect, just to give you our input.
Right. John, where do you want to go with this? We have to put this in, not in stone, but at least a strong indication of what is our intention. Speak up, John. I don't hear you.
Someone just whispered to split it. From a staff perspective, in my opinion, we could go either from the commission staff, not department staff, commission staff, we could go either way. I don't know if the department has a comment on this or not.
But, how's the department feel? Oh,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. We may be easy, but we're not going to sucker into that one. seriously, I think both Commissioner Gustafson and Sutton raise very valid issues, and I'm not quite sure how you split that baby. Because certainly we're going to be in attendance wherever you are. Wednesday, Thursday are easier in terms of flights for everybody just because they're low flight days. And Fridays, I live in an equally small community, and it is, you got one chance. And if you and oftentimes when our friends in the legislature are in, you don't have a chance because every other flight's full as well. So that's the only comment I would add, but we're certainly willing to live with whatever decision the commission makes.
Yeah, going south out of Sacramento on a Friday afternoon, flying southwest, the security line goes out to the parking lot and loops back in across that sky bridge. It is unbelievable how bad it is on Friday afternoon. So I have a lot of empathy for the Friday afternoon problem. And we all have to, up here in Northern California, fundamentally, we have to go through SACTO most of the time, at least. So, but not all of us. Never mind. So, anyway, so what do we want to do here, guys?
Yeah, I turned it on to say, you know, if it's really this much of a debate, I'm happy to split the difference, but I don't know how confusing that is to the public and everyone if we meet some of the days on Wednesday, Thursday, and sometimes on Thursday, Friday.
I would be happy with that as well, especially if we can figure out where the travel challenges are the biggest concern.
Well, that's actually a good point. How about some of these look like they may... Do any of these back up into potential holiday weekends or the weekend immediately thereafter or anything?
The
because if they do, those will be the ones to move to the middle of the week and therefore split that. Right.
The April meeting is that Easter. Sunday is Easter. But if we did a Wednesday, Thursday, people would be traveling back on Thursday. Perfect. That's our longest distance from Sacramento, I think, the Crescent City, or the hardest meeting to get to next year.
And the September meeting has a potential problem, too, if you go Thursday, Friday.
Oh, Labor Day.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay,
I mean,
well,
I mean,
how about that?
For my input, I would just as soon leave it the way it is rather than split it and confuse the rest of the world, including myself.
You mean leave it Thursday, Friday?
Yeah.
Steve, can you put up slide number one then, which has the Thursday, Friday dates?
That might make that might Labor help Day. People.
So the September meeting would be a holiday weekend.
The September meeting would be the holiday weekend, which would be tough, you know. I mean, that would be really tough, you know, because most of us have, you know, relatives flying in, I mean, doing all kinds of things like that. Also, for those of you who are members of homeowners associations and whatnot, they almost invariably are that weekend.
But on Labor
that's
Day,
the weekend that everyone or Labor Day.
If we meet here on Labor Day weekend, we'd be traveling in the opposite direction of most tourists, right? Who are coming up here for the weekend, not going back. Still, right. Though, I just want to say I have sympathy for the perspective that travel on by land on Fridays is difficult. So I don't want to be insensitive to that.
Well, I would like to, I for one really don't like the September meeting being up against Labor Day. That is a bad idea, in my opinion.
I'll do it the week after on that one.
As somebody who lives on the water, I will not make a Labor Day weekend commission meeting.
Steve wants to see.
Well, me too. I mean, I have family commitments. I have people flying
in from
all over the United States.
I can decide everything that day. That's fine.
Hey, you warned us against touching it, and then you touched it.
Yeah, see how it works? Just as a point of history, when we started doing this, and back then it was etched in stone, there were no July meetings, and there was a first week in August and a last week in August meeting setting that I think had been tradition for 50 or 100 years. For whatever reason, they held two meetings in August to dodge the Labor Day problem and didn't even bring September into play. There was no meeting in September.
The problem with that, commissioners, is the three week in between the two meetings gets really tough with noticing and department meeting deadlines. I mean, it's a crunch for everybody because a lot of times the deadline to get things into the binder is like the day of our earlier meeting if it's only a three-week difference. So it gets really tough. Seems like we mainly run into trouble at that September meeting.
Well, April, the Easter is not great either. Adriana? No, we don't. So if we were to take perhaps April and September and go to Wednesday, Thursday, and leave the rest of it as posted, how does that sit with everyone?
And that would give us a chance to try out the Wednesday,
Thursday.
Got
to find Commissioner Sutton.
Oh, I'd like to do November as well, because you've got a Veterans Day holiday. Is that correct?
Right.
Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, you
Well,
do.
The 11th, though, I don't believe is a week.
It's not
I don't
a
think
Monday.
It's Monday.
Okay, it's not a Monday. Okay.
That shouldn't really even be up there, actually.
Well, if we were to take...
It sounds like we're just going to do a couple of Wednesday, Thursdays.
Yeah, just the September and the April. How does everybody feel about that? Commissioner Sutton begrudgingly said fine, which wasn't...
Well, wait, we gave him eight of the...
Oh, perfectly fine.
He should be happy.
Not begrudgingly at all.
Okay, is that okay? We avoid the holidays. Okay, good. That's
just to make sure we're clear, we will do then September 2nd and 3rd, which is a Wednesday, Thursday, and then also we will do April 8 and 9, which is a Wednesday, Thursday. The other meetings will be then Thursday, Friday.
The traditional.
Correct.
As posted.
Okay.
Is that everybody got?
So we'd like a motion to vote on that.
Do I hear the motion?
Get that.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous.
Great. Item 14, new business. What's it? Oh, in the exhibit. Okay. Under new business in your binder, there's a letter What exhibit number is it, John?
14.
So it's right on the back page, actually, of this right there.
From Ponto?
Yes. And bring it to your attention. There is regulation that requires, I think it's statute, that if we get a request similar to this for regulation change, that we have to respond either that we're doing it or we're not. Wanted to bring it to your attention on this. And we've talked to the department. Did Sankey leave? Sankey's gone. Oh,
Sankey's there.
Are you familiar with this letter? We showed this to you. What was your what's the department's recommendation on this?
Leave Sankey alone. He's playing with Wrigley.
Yeah, we were playing with the dog. Well, I recommend we comply with the law. And, you know, that was an easy one. Next. Now, I think that's something that between the commission and department staff, we probably need to develop a procedure where we get a request that we respond in writing in some way, whether putting it on an agenda or saying no, at this point we're not going to, just so that there's some record that we're complying with that statute.
Well, yeah, we would follow this up with a letter, but this is giving the commissioners a chance to weigh in on it, and I think they'd like to hear what you guys think of the specific request, not the law, but this consideration for a rule change to the Southern California rock crab fishery or permission in case of illness with doctors. This would take, I believe this might take legislative change, or yeah. Can you do it within title? Can we do it within Title 14?
No, we're still looking at that section. It's kind of a mess, and we're not prepared to discuss it at this point.
Well, we're required. Yeah. Go ahead, Deborah. Bad mic. Try the other one.
And you all thought it was just me. Deborah Barnes, Attorney General's Office. We'll take further look into this issue with the department. I'll work with the department's legal staff and see what the give the commission some guidance in terms of whether a statutory and or a regulatory change, if the commission desires to suggest one or do the other, see if that's warranted.
Okay. Yeah, I personally feel for the families who are affected in this manner, and it would be great if we could in some way appropriately address this issue as quickly as possible. That it would be great. Within the law. So.
Right. Well, of course. The one of the issues, and we've discussed this very quick, and I'll be very brief, is this issue affects all the fisheries that have
absolutely
permits.
Sure.
And you've been presented cases piecemeal, whether it was an urchin fisherman or rock crab fisherman, and unfortunately the authorities for each fishery is a little different on this matter, which is one of the messes that I'm hoping that we collectively together clean up. And so while we certainly want to get you an idea of what the options are for this specific case,
it would
really
be better to have a global
yeah,
approach.
We would like to have a global
right.
solution.
Step up to 30,000 feet, look down on this
yeah,
one.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, good. Thank you. John?
Item 15 is going to have to carry over till tomorrow morning, which is announcement of results from executive session. And then we have the consent calendar. Suggested motion to approve items 16 through 23.
Second.
Any discussion or commentary, or are there speaker cards?
There are no speaker cards on
okay.
consent.
Any
calendar.
Discussion or commentary?
Oh. One comment. I just wanted to congratulate the department on what I thought was a very well-written fisheries report.
Oh.
These are, I know these are issued under they're required by the MLMA. They're issued irregularly, but they are really useful when they are. So please pass that along to your staff.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I would personally like to second that. I mean, I've read a lot of reports, you know, and those of us who are up here and down there and throughout the audience who actually read everything that is submitted, pardon me, sometimes it can get a little deadly. These were actually engrossing and interesting. They were well written as well as factual and concise. They were really well done.
Thank you much. We'll make sure our staff that spent all the time doing those gets that credit and that acknowledgement.
Well, and they were really absorbed and appreciated by the commission, I'm sure, you know, because I got a heads up to, oh, boy, you got to read this, and I really enjoyed doing so. Okay, any further comments? No comments on consent calendar? All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. John?
Item 24, announcement of future meetings. We're making that announcement today because tomorrow we're having a joint meeting with the Nevada Board of Wildlife Commissioners in this room, and that's going to start at 8:30 a.m., and that agenda is attached, or it's on the table there. But for our next full commission meeting, it'll be October 2nd and 3rd in Santa Rosa, followed by November 13 and 14 in Huntington Beach, and then wrapping up this calendar year, December 11 and 12 in Sacramento.
Okay, any other further comments?
Okay.
Do I have a motion to recess until we address item 15 tomorrow morning prior to the joint meeting with the executive session? We're going to actually just now recess and go straight into executive session. And then after that, we will report on executive session first thing tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. 8? 8:30, excuse me, at 8:30. Okay? We stand. Recess.
You need to take your gear, too. We need to get all of our gear out of here today.
All gear out?
Yeah, because they're going to work.
Yeah, there may be jazzercise here or something.
You betcha.
Well, they're going to redo the room for the...
You betcha. We already got it.